You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today we are wrapping up our free agency preview as we fly into draft week, and free agency is just about 7 days away. It is crazy. Today is our last show looking at free agency, and we're going to be looking at potentially the Pacers' biggest decision of the offseason, or how they can make it not their biggest decision of the offseason, and that is, should they keep TJ McConnell or Doug McDermott? Because the Pacers, after they draft, will be about $12 million from the luxury tax, which is probably not enough to keep both of these guys unless they make a trade. And we'll talk at the end about the possibility of them making a deal to keep both and if that's worth it. But what we want to do is, which player makes more sense for them to keep and why? And we're going to run through the case for McDermott and then the case for McConnell. And then at the end, do all the other considerations. And of course, as I said yesterday, pushing back our weekly show a day, joining me in the other line to break this all down, from the car somewhere in between Indiana and Tennessee, my co-host, former Indy Corners writer extraordinaire, Adam Friedman. Adam, how are you?
Doing pretty well. Are you surprised I even was able to hear you that whole time?
Of course I was. I'm not surprised. Our troubleshooting before the show was not great, but I believe in the power of hotspots for today.
Well, let's hope Verizon can deliver for us. You did your big board yesterday. Who'd you have as your 13th pick?
I did. My big board is not related to a mock draft necessarily, but for those who didn't listen, I did a whole big board yesterday. But Corey Kispert was 13th for me, Adam. The Pacers conglomerate does not seem to like Corey Kispert. And by conglomerate, I mean fans.
Did you take him in a mock draft too? Because I think I remember people freaking out about that. Or maybe they thought he was going to go to them. I don't know.
I did not take him in a mock, no, but he's good, so I'd be fine with that. But speaking of Corey Kispert, ironically, let's start with Doug McDermott. McDermott, in a small report or a part of a report from the Indy Star from Jay Michael, I believe the quote was, the Pacers are not likely to reunite with McDermott or something to that effect because his price is going up. It'll be harder to keep him. I kind of wrote about that in my free agency preview for McDermott as well. So the case for keeping McDermott and why they would choose him, to me, is pretty simple. To me, of the two players, McConnell and McDermott, I think McDermott's a little better. So one, that's the reason you would keep him. But two, we ran through this exercise of going through each position for the Pacers in free agency, point guard, shooting guard, small forward, whatever. There are a lot more backup ones than there are reliable threes. So not only is McDermott the slightly better player for the Pacers, replacing him is a lot harder. So that makes keeping him a little more important, both short and long term. And his key skills, shooting, is really important, whereas McConnell's key skills are really helpful, right? Creating shots for teammates and now yourself. He's got that mid-range game, and his defense is really impressive, obviously. But they're slightly more replaceable than being an elite shooter like McDermott. So to me, most of the checkboxes favor McDermott of the two that you'd rather keep.
Yeah, you always pay for shooting. I mean, it's harder to find good shooters. Like, time and time again, it's harder to find a guy who can stretch the floor, shoot around 40% from three. The question is, do you overpay for shooters? And that's where the question of McDermott, like, how much do you have to overpay to keep him? And you could find ones. And I mean, it also depends on who they draft at the same time. But yeah, McDermott seems like, at least if you're going to pick one, you want to have him because he's a little bit younger and just a better shooter.
And I think McConnell fits well with any team because of the way he plays. But McDermott in particular fits really well with Sabonis, right? And that seems like a duo they could have going forward. So if they are going to prioritize based on fit with their current core long term, like, that seems like a good long term fit. And McConnell, again, would be a fit with any team. But go ahead.
McConnell feels more replaceable, right? He just does. Maybe he isn't in some ways, but he just feels like you can find a guy, like they found McConnell, for example, right? A guy who's sitting kind of in that, like, borderline rotation bench guy who maybe on another team who's young but needs some, you know, get some minutes, whatever, and kind of pop and play backup point guard for you, right? You can find those guys pretty easily. I think it's really, really hard to find 38% to 42% 3-point shooter from, like, percentage wise. Like, those guys are snagged up by every team and they're overpaid. The crazy where point guards in McConnell's range who can't shoot threes are not, like, overpaid. They have to prove themselves to then get overpaid, but it's easier to find more of those guys.
Neither have been effective in the postseason they had against Miami. That said, to, you know, ideally, or at least looking at skills around the league that work in the playoffs, non-shooting guards are harder to play in the playoffs than shooters who struggle. Like at least McDermott, even if he's not as good in the playoffs because teams can scheme his shooting and scout him a little more, is more of a threat because, you know, the other team is doing something to stop him even when he doesn't have the ball, than a non-shooter like McConnell off the ball, right? You can't close with him as much. His limitations hurt more in that instance. So from a playoffs perspective, and that's where Kevin Pritchard said after the season, right? That's where they want to be. That's where they're trying to stabilize and get to. That's why they hired Rick Carlisle, right? Once they hired Carlisle, we're not just guessing about their path forward anymore. Like they're trying to be better. So in a playoff setting, I think McDermott is slightly better. You know, McConnell's still good in the postseason again. But part of the discussion of pro-McDermott, because of the way we're structuring this podcast, has to be anti-McConnell. The same thing will happen in the next segment. And I think the playoffs are a little more in the favor of McDermott as well.
Yeah. The playoffs, what, 2 years ago? I mean, that's four games, so we don't have to, like, keep that for what it is. Four games. McConnell, he couldn't really keep that because he couldn't guard guys defensively. At the same time, you couldn't really put McDermott because he just also could play defensively, and he also didn't shoot very well in the past, if I remember right. So, like, I mean, if he's cold, he's, like, almost fully unplayable. But I don't know. They both have their strengths. I guess just because of McDermott's size, he just kind of make it work. Or McConnell, like, it's clearly, like, if he's out there, can he put in pick and rolls every play, and they're trying to switch him every single time to just destroy him.
Yeah, that's also totally fair. So, yeah, that has to be a consideration as well. And then you know, I think another thing beyond even – the free agent market and their replaceability is you look at the Pacers roster as it is right now. Like they could draft someone at either of these positions. That makes what I'm about to say a little bit of a moot point, and that's just in 3 days. But even if they draft a forward, right, at guard, they'll still have Brogdon, LeVert, Lamb, Sumner, Holiday. I mean, even Keelan Martin played guard a little bit down the stretch of the season. Those are all guys that are good enough to be in the rotation or at least close enough in Keelan Martin's case the end of last season. Whereas on the wing, if you put Keelan in that group, sure, you have Warren, McDermott, Holiday, and I guess Keelan, and that's kind of it, right? You have and you always need wing depth, always important in this league, especially with, you know, Warren's injury history, Lamb's injury history. So wings are always more important. And given the Pacers roster construction, they might need the depth at that position a tiny bit more than they do at guard, which could be just another tip in Doug McDermott's favor.
Yeah. I guess the big question for McDermott is, right, what do you think he gets in free agency? Like what are we talking about? 3 for 36, 3 for 45, 3 for 27. That seems low. Like, I mean, what are we talking about in terms of money? Because that's the difference, right? Because they're going to be, let's say, $11 million under luxury tax, give or take, right? 11 to 13, depending on what the pick is. So, and how things shake out. So that's where this comes down to at the same time. Is like, where's McDermott's salary range?
Yeah, that's sort of, we'll get to that in the next segment a little bit. I guess we can just kind of pivot now. Is like, a lot of the argument for McDermott is that, you know, he might be better and a better fit and fits on any team. But he's more expensive for those exact same reasons, right? And he pretty much signing McDermott would be close to the Pacers' whole summer, barring trades. Like, obviously, we both expect them to make at least some cost-cutting move or some deal of some kind, maybe not a huge one, but something to shake things up a little bit deeper within the team. So that could change this calculus a little bit. It's impossible to predict that at this point in time. But you know, given their tax concerns, McDermott would be there whole summer. And that's sort of the argument against him, is that just signing him and then losing McConnell and not being able to use your MLE might not be the best use of your summer. So let's pivot to the pro McConnell discussion now, which of course has some on-court benefits, off-court benefits, and monetary benefits, which is where this discussion really changes for him. But first, Adam, I want to talk about the great folks over at Rock Auto, because you're riding in a car and that car is working perfectly to get you home. And with the ever increasing numbers of makes and models, it's hard for your local chain auto parts store to store all to stock all the parts you'll need to keep your car safe and running. Like Adams, you have to go there, endure the stupid questioning at the counter if your car is an LX, an EX, a CX, a ZX, whatever brand or spec it is. And then you wait there while they order parts for you that they don't even have. So you have to come back. It's a pain. It takes forever. You can save time and money instead at rockauto.com. They have a family business who've been serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Their prices are always reliably low for every customer. And they'll have everything you need for your car or truck. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. So with McConnell, do you want to start with the money benefits first or the basketball benefits first?
Well, so I think the money one, just to start with, because I think, and it's pretty clear, he's not going to get more, if they don't make another move, than their like luxury tax salary cap, right? Like, I mean, it would be like shocking if he got the $12 million in space they roughly have for their artificial cap.
Yeah, the number I've always used on this pod, and I think you've sort of agreed with me, is DJ Augustine last year got 3 for 21. I think that is a close facsimile of what McConnell can get. Maybe $1 million more, so it's 3 for 24, but you know, then maybe even that deal
10,
would start,
I guess. Like up, 1 year, $10 million, right? And that could maybe be the or whatever the MLE is, I guess that'd probably be his cap, but like the 9.6 number, whatever the hell it's
gonna be. That's totally fair too. If they want to bloat it for a 1 year deal as well, they could do something like that. But the reason, so we'll get, there are on court reasons for McConnell over McDermott. I don't want to brush those off, but I think the biggest reason you might choose McConnell of the two is because by signing McConnell to, let's say, that 7.5 range and a deal, is it's super easy to make the moves alongside that to give yourself enough room to then also use your MLE. So you're not totally replacing McDermott, but you're getting McConnell and someone else who can kind of contribute as opposed to just McDermott and like bit players. So not only is McConnell good, and some people listening could make the argument that he's better than McDermott, right? And if you think he's better and he's cheaper, then it's a no-brainer. You pick him and the other stuff you can spend money on, get as close to the tax as you can and run with that team, right? They were really close to the tax last year before the TJ Leaf trade. So even if you don't think McConnell is better, you might value McConnell plus something else more than McDermott. And the money is the biggest factor there.
Right. So if they could have the options right now are like the 11 or so million space, the call it $18 million salary of a trade. Right. And so the question is, what can they like? Can they piece together basically three rotation players out of that money? And that's what you kind of weigh out. Like McConnell easily fits into that $11 million. You don't make any other moves. But then you basically don't get that third player. But if they somehow can shed money, sign in, trade, whatever it is, like maybe end up with McConnell, McDermott, and a third player all in a $29 million structure, which is kind of what, like, that's why you may pick McConnell over McDermott, because he can fit into that. And maybe you get a different player that has some of McDermott's skill sets for $6 or $7 million instead of the $12 or $13 going to cost.
Yeah, trades make it complicated to just decide on them given their current constraints, right? Because like if they dump Lamb, they could easily fit both, right? And then they could use the tax MLE elsewhere. But I don't want to just guess that. I'm just assuming that the current situation is what they'll be facing. And it seems like from like the semi-reporting we've gotten on it so far that that's kind of going to be the case, although all this stuff is so fluid and fast around the draft that it's just unbelievably hard to keep up with, that I'm kind of operating on that assumption for what we're doing right now. But even beyond the money part, McConnell's a good player, right? Like there's a reason that he'll be coveted and his value's gone up, right? Since, remember, 2 years ago, this guy's free agency market was, what was it? What did he sign with the Pacers? 2 for $7 million? Like in
total? 3.5 a year was what I thought it was.
Yeah.
And like, one of them was a team option, right? It was like a
partial guarantee in year two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he only got $4.5 million guaranteed 2 years ago. Like he has established himself much better than that. Like last year, his scoring was up for the first time ever. His assists are up substantially over past seasons of his career. He shot really well from inside the arc. He really established himself off the court as well, right? Really good fit with the Pacers organization. So that kind of stuff matters a lot here too. And like, because they can add something else to him and they value him so much. And like Bjorkren really liked McConnell, right? Like there's a reason he played him 26 minutes, whereas the last three seasons before that, he peaked at 22.4, is because Bjorkren really liked him. And, you know, Rick Carlisle brought up re-signing both of these guys, but he brought up both of them as guys he, you know, it'd be good if the pitchers could re-sign in the pressure. Like they clearly value his skills and he is good, right? A lot of the bench units, you take him out and their net ratings plummet. And I know on-off numbers are finicky sometimes, but you know, he's a good part of the bench's success. He even got to play more with the starters this year. So even from a basketball fit, just a guy who can be a good point of attack defender, can get into the paint, can create shots for his teammates, right? He's one of the few guys. Like, it's very rare that in the NBA, there's less and less these guys every year of the guys who enjoy setting up their teammates more than scoring. And he's like the pinnacle of it, right? He loves playing that way.
Yeah, I do wonder if, remember, so he signed for so little, like, is it easier to find that guy, right? Like, in free agency, right? I mean, like, there'll be some a bunch of players who are kind of sitting there as, like, I think before, but like, kind of sitting as, like, the third string point guards that could maybe play backup if we're given an opportunity to. And, like, could you find that? Probably the versus McDermott replacement is, like, just harder to find. Like, McConnell clearly was, like, kind of a diamond in the rough, but he was, like, maybe some gold in the rough. Kind of thing. And like, but like, that's why it's a little easier to find.
Yeah, that's possible. Remember when we went through the point guards free agency wise, that was probably the deepest position, right? Or at least in the top two.
Well, and I think if we had done that, I mean, we probably did do it the year McConnell was free agent. Like, where would he have ranked on our, like I vaguely remember.
You look at that. Was that 2018?
No, 19, right? It'd be. Played 19-20 for the Pacers, 19-20 and 2021. So it'd be 2019 for 18.
I can actually look at that, but yeah, that's a good way to think of it. Is well, like, how did he rank that year?
He wasn't on our radar. And when they signed him, we thought he was going to be the third point guard because we thought he can't really shoot. He was really good in maybe that like minor stretch in the playoffs for the Sixers that first year of Simmons, where Simmons just kind of still figuring it out. Also, he's still figuring it out today.
That was a pretty
but
good
like
point guard class the year the Pacers signed him.
Yeah, but that's amazing. Like we didn't have expectation for him. Now all of a sudden he's like probably a guaranteed backup, no matter where he signs. Like that's like he's definitely. Right. So maybe there's another guy like that or two. And you know, there's a few of those guys every year. I feel like that kind of like reach that status kind of because it's one of those.
Yeah, but if you get it wrong, your bench unit is screwed, right? Because ball handling is so important.
Yeah. No, that's fair. But then the problem is with like, is shooting. It's like it's more important.
Frankly. And I think you can find guys with like a facsimile of his offensive skill set. Like I've talked about Howell Neto a lot as a potential replacement for McConnell this offseason if he leaves, but very few, in fact, none. The number is none. The number of guys who can do it on offense and defense is zero, right? Like at his price point, like you obviously there's better players than him who are better offensive and defensive players, but for guys with his size and limitations, very few of them can play well on both ends. Like he's probably the cheapest two-way bench point guard you can get. Yeah. Maybe Archie Diacono, but he's worse at everything, basically. So it's a very limited crop that can do both.
Yeah, I do wonder, though, can you piecemeal your backup point guard, least ball handling minutes with other players?
That's a dangerous game, my friend.
I know it's dangerous, but, like, LeVert, could he stagger some? Could he get some bus staggers? I'm like, I mean, I know it's dangerous, but, like, yeah. Maybe that's the way to do it. I mean, have we seen somebody successfully pull that off? I mean, outside of like the Chris Paul, George Hart, two of the at the time top 10 players in the league, there really hasn't been a way to stagger like
no, not really.
Starters to right. There's not really been a yeah. So it's more like a desperation move at times if somebody's hurt.
You can argue both McConnell or McDermott is the better guy for the second unit. I think it's McDermott, and I think that gap is big enough that I think I would. The gap between their skills is big enough to me that you'd risk losing out using the MLE right away in free agency. Maybe you try to free that up with a trade. But I totally understand people having that gap being closer to the point that you'd prefer bringing back McConnell and him running the second unit and then using the money from that you still have left from the MLE elsewhere. And that's assuming they don't make any cost-cutting moves, which seems extremely unlikely. But it's very possible they have to decide between these two guys.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I would say, though, is what's odd is I feel like McDermott – I guess he could play at the starters in the right starting lineup, but like overall, when he ends up becoming like a sub in starter, his efficiency like just plummets from what he is with the bench. You know, where McConnell at least I think can play like sub starter minutes at times and actually still be like efficient enough or be the same player. Maybe it's because
player stats as a starter anywhere.
I mean, I'm just going off of the eye test this year of like, right, McDermott was just a little like he started off really well, and then as soon as he began to start games, he was just not as good. I mean, you look like there, you can look at his like starting split to this and during his player season review versus like his, like the 25 games in a row he started basically, and the rest he didn't. He was just not as good as a starter. Just been playing more minutes than he needed to. He was getting destroyed defensively at times. Like it wasn't as good, but that's not surprising. I mean,
they're real. But to me, it's just he's playing, like they were so hurt this year that when he was starting, he was playing with like not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's totally part of it too. I just think McDermott, like perfect role is like 23, 25 minutes. Bench unit and maybe closing games if he's on fire kind of thing.
Okay, McDermott as a starter this year, 29 games, 14.6 points per game on 51.4% shooting, 40.4% from three and 86% from the free throw line.
Okay.
But the Pacers were a minus 75 in those minutes.
Yeah. I mean, he was getting torched defensively.
Yeah.
The defensive rating, I think, look it up, was like in the high
one. With the bench, he was 37 games. He scored 13 points per game on 54.9, 37.2 splits, but the Pacers were plus 27. And we've known for a while that McConnell, Justin Holiday, McDermott bench unit so good. They didn't play together nearly as much this year, and they didn't have Sabonis with them this year. So who knows how much different that'll be, especially if one of those guys is removed. But I think McDermott has said that, you know, in the past, he likes being able to see the game from the bench. We have totally derailed from what we were talking about originally here. So I think there's a couple other considerations I want to make in the McDermott-McConnell free agency debate, if there has to be one, which there might have to be one because expensive players are expensive. So let's take one more break and talk about those other considerations. But first, I got to talk to you guys about the great folks over at betonline.ag who are providing the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action, including the ongoing MLB season, my Phillies walk-off home run tonight, UFC and MMA action. And for the NBA specifically, they've got Olympic action on there, NBA futures, NBA draft. It's all crazy. The Pacers odds to win the title on there next year, plus 6,600. If you're into that sort of stuff, I would not bet the Pacers to win the title next year, but it's your money, not mine. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device. Check out all the great sign-up bonuses and contest info they have. Don't sit on the sidelines. Get into the game as teams finalize their offseason to get ready for next season. Head over to that website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device and sign up today. You'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if, when you sign up, you use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So there's a few other considerations to me in this discussion. Obviously, we've brought up the big one, and that's if they trade someone, even if it's just a low like level salary of, say, Aaron Holiday, and that's the only salary dump they're able to accomplish. I don't even think trading Aaron Holiday is necessarily a salary dump, but that's a partial goal of that. Even just trading one like $3 million or more level guy gives them enough room to probably keep both of these guys in the center of the tax, although it'd be pretty close.
Oh, you're getting close. It's like dicey.
Yeah, you're very close there. I think you might have to move two guys or like swap out one of your minimum guys like Keelan Martin or Jakarr Sampson for an undrafted free agent.
What do you think you need? $19 million to keep both?
Maybe not quite that much.
So getting rid of Holiday gets you to
in my head, I've had it as about 17 or 18 to keep both, but maybe 19 is right.
I feel like
Holiday would only get you to about 15. So you might be right.
I'm thinking like 12 and 7, right? McDermott 12 and
McDermott. Yeah, that's fair. That's completely fair. Well, okay. Are you saying 12 per year or 12 in the first year? Because that's very different for how this is thought of.
I thought McDermott would sign a 3 for 36 deal.
Right. So if that's ascending, his first year is like 10.8. You know what I mean?
Oh, I got you.
That's what I mean by that really matters in this situation. But another thing, when we discuss that, that's another factor, right? Like next season, TJ Warren's up for a new deal, right? Like Miles Turner's up for an extension. You might want to flatten these deals. But anyway, if they want to squeeze out the money right now, you know, they could probably get both for in the 17 to 18 range. And then you're really close with the two moves I just said. So they might not have to choose between one or the other, but if they choose both, which I wanted to talk about choosing both or neither as options here, if they choose both, that's it. Like they would have to do something pretty big beyond that to be able to fit in another player that makes sense for them. It'd be Jeremy Lamb, basically. And salary dumping two guys is a lot harder. You know, you're giving up assets twice at that point. It's certainly possible that they do that. It's just less likely to me. So that's possible that they could get both and get another like medium contributor if they're able to dump Lamb and shed salary elsewhere. But it's possible that they can get both, but I don't think they could do both plus more without some creative work.
Yeah, you also think about like Warren, like you said, will be up for he'll be a free agent in the next season.
So you
think
about gone.
So if you get rid of Lamb, you got to assume some of that salary from the future because Lamb's is going to be 100 guys this year. Also,
the Colts ran into that this offseason, right? They wanted to keep the space for Quentin Nelson and Darius Leonard extensions, so they didn't spend as much in free agency, right? The Pacers are going to be thinking similarly in like the long term approach to this free agency, yeah. Right? Like obviously. And we're talking about role players from a team that lost in the play-in game. You know, like if it doesn't go perfectly, it's not the sky is falling situation. But, you know, thinking long term, right, these guys both kind of fit with the core, and that's why we're talking about them here. But, like, it's not the end of the world if you think long term with, like, TJ Warren's money or the space there. So it's not,
yeah, but
it's not
if you like
so aggressive to dump money.
If you assume Warren's getting, like, let's say 20 to 25, and it could get more depending on how the year goes, you're thinking, like, and let's say the cap goes up, what we think, 5, maybe 10 million next year if everything returns and we're starting a full stadium and whatnot.
Yeah, I have it going. The NBA estimates will go up about 6 million. Yeah.
Six. Okay. So we're in that range. If you re-sign McConnell and McDermott to both multi-year deals, that's some of that extra space that you, if your cap is a luxury tax, that like kind of screws with you, right? So the layup money frees, but maybe that's not enough money completely. And then if you use some of that layup money to re-sign both guys, then you get in this weird situation.
Yeah. So the short term thinking, yeah, they would be both good to have back and Carlisle likes them and that's great. But the long term thinking maybe suggests one or the other also makes sense. So you can have the money to keep your actually good players and also do other stuff like using your full MLE, which is going to be very important for the Pacers as a tool in the future. So let's talk about the flip side argument before we get into some other creative capery, keeping neither. Right. And that seems, you know, not totally unfeasible. Right. They get priced out of McDermott very easily, and then McConnell goes somewhere else to a team that offers him the full MLE. Like, remember, we've talked about with him and Justin Holiday last year, like some of these players who have a child during the season, they value that long-term stability going forward. I don't know what McConnell's priorities are in free agency at all. I'm just saying that's not out of the realm of possibility. So let's say they lose both, right? That would stink for the Pacers, although they still have a lot of returning players, so the rotation is mostly set. They have that 13th pick. The pro for them there is that instead of using the tax MLE valued at about $5.5 million, they could use the full MLE at about $9 million and maybe even the BAE as well to add in some guys. So one of those guys would probably be about, you know, between McConnell and McDermott's impact. The other one would be, you know, like a Jakar Sampson level, a little better than that, which is fine. Those are fine ways to replace them. Exceptions are there for that reason, to get contributors back. But, you know, you'd like to save your salary cap exceptions if you can, or to use them on the perfect player, and using them to replace guys who you could have had is always tough. And the bird rights trap is a factor here, but that's not out of the realm of possibility to me that they end up needing to use the full mid-level because both are not returning.
Yeah. To me, it is not like, that's why it's not an end of the world situation, because of that exact reason, right? You still have the MLE available. So really, if you lose both, and maybe you assume Lamb like comes back to like being a good enough rotation player, he replaces one of those already, and then you have the MLE. So you're right. You're trying to, like, that's like 9 rotation players, give or take.
Plus 13th pick.
Yeah. So, well, 13th, like you said in the past, like, he won't probably factor into this season.
Right. For rotation. Unless they both leave, right.
Yeah, well, even at both leagues, think about it. So that there's 6 guys, and I mean, even if they trade a center, I assume it'd be for a player. So just there's 6 guys. It's the 5 players plus Justin Holiday. You add O'Shea is 7, and then the MLE could be 8. And then if they trade one of the centers and go as 9, or it's somebody else again. So like they don't, and Lamb, I think I mentioned Lamb. So that's sort of like they can get to not 8, 9, or 10 guys, even if they lose both, just because they're like, it's not the end of the world, I guess, because it's just the players. And now if Lamb is unplayable, like was last year, then they're at the dicey, but they can try to move the salary for something at least.
Yeah, and it's an injury-prone team, right? So depth is pretty important. So
at that point, though, like depth, I don't know. I mean, like, you lose 4 starters, you have the same problems that happen again this last season, right? I'm not sure any team can survive that unless you're the Nets. Like, that's about it.
But again, too, like, this sounds so pessimistic outlook on the Pacers, and that's not intentional. But like, again, we're talking about bench players from a team that went 34-38, right? Like, there's only so much damage a departure can truly cause. That's not to belittle the impact they have. They're awesome players. There's a reason we're doing an entire podcast about re-signing them, but replacing them is possible given the free agents available this summer. So it's not like the end of the world if these guys walk, but because of the way the cap works and the rules work, they can keep these guys at numbers that they can't sign their replacements for. So that's why it's so important that they try to use bird rights or early bird rights to keep them. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'll say it's not as bad as some teams that have lost like starters because they wouldn't want to pay luxury tax, right, and they have no way to replace them. Like the Bucks in the championships, who cares? Like the Celtics is an example.
So the final consideration that you made me ruin my spoiler for on this one is sign and trades that I wanted to talk about here. So the problem with people who talk about sign and trades on the internet for all of time, 95% of your sign and trade proposals are terrible, is that there has to be so many things in place for them to make sense. And one of those things is that the team receiving the player in a sign and trade has to be able to not acquire them via other means. And that kind of rules out McConnell right away, because McConnell's not going to get more than the MLE, and every team, cap space teams or over the cap teams, have at least the MLE in terms of resources to add a guy. So he's not going to be signed and traded almost certainly, unless it's a very, very, very unique circumstance, like it's aggregated in a bigger trade. And then I can't foresee that here. But McDermott, on the other hand, could get more than the MLE, right? If he gets three for somewhere between 35 and 40, that's above the MLE. And then these competing teams can't use that resource on him if they want to acquire him. So it's possible that because he's such a good shooter, and shooters are a premium, right? We saw what Joe Harris and Bertans got last year. We saw what like Darius Miller got $7 million a year the year before that, and he literally can only shoot. Like, shooters get a lot of money just for that skill. It's possible McDermott fetches that, and that then that's a tool the Pacers can then use. They could use his free agency to add other resources in a way that they couldn't, even if it's just a trade exception for a whole year, right? Like we've seen with the Celtics and all these teams. Like, I know that what people are going to say, and they're going to eye roll and say, oh, I've heard all these trade exceptions don't get used. Well, 90% of trade exceptions are like $1 million and they can't get used. Most big trade exceptions do get used. So even sign and trading McDermott for nothing has some value to the Pacers, but yeah, also a contending team could actually want him, and getting some asset, even if it's just a second rounder to help an over the cap team, that has value too. So that is another consideration when deciding which players you could possibly extract an asset out of McDermott's free agency because they have full bird rights.
So, but sign and trade still affects the salary cap, right? Or luxury tax, I guess, right? So like, why? Even if if we sign McConnell, you said in a $4 million in space, I guess it helps. You can't, right? You can't package a trade exception in a trade. It's individual move. So like if you get a $12 million trade exception for McDermott, you're really only use four of anyways.
You can use it next summer though.
Oh, okay. So maybe
that's for a whole year or at the trade deadline or something.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, like you're still kind of stuck in your luxury tax cap. I'm not sure. Maybe it ends up going, maybe you have 6 million, you know, it might help a little bit. You're not wrong.
No, I mean, but it's just another asset to have. It's better than not having it basically.
No, totally. But it won't be like, I don't know. It's like game breaking, I guess.
If the option is no McDermott, no trade exception, or no McDermott plus trade exception,
yeah, you'll like take it. You probably attach an asset to do that unless the team, right? I mean,
no way. Definitely not.
Absolutely. Oh, I guess that if they want him that bad.
Correct. They can't get him without the Pacers. That's the point of a signing.
Yeah, but then how do they do that without matching salaries? Or what do they have to do then?
They might not. I mean, they could be a three-teamer. The Pacers could actually want the player they get back for him. There's a million ways you can do it.
Okay, because I'm just trying to think how they end up with the exception without. I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter. Do you remember? You know the last Pacers sign and trade? Remember it?
Do I remember the last Pacers sign and trade? They received Malcolm Brogdon in a sign and trade. Is that what you're referring to?
No. The actual player for player sign and trade.
Pacers. That they sent out.
Sent a player out. Got a player in return.
Oh man, no, I do not remember.
It's pretty recent. It was our first summer doing this podcast, I think. Maybe second.
I can't remember, no.
CJ Miles for Corey Joseph.
Oh, you know why I don't remember? That's because it technically wasn't a sign-and-trade, but yes, that is.
Was it not a sign? Wait, what? How is it not a sign-and-trade?
So the way... What, ready for some real cap dorkness?
I thought I had you with a good fact, but I guess I'm wrong.
So the Raptors were kind of close to the tax, so they couldn't use their full MLE that offseason. But they traded Corey Joseph to the Pacers into their cap space for nothing. So then they had enough room to sign CJ Miles to the full MLE. So actually that trade was Corey Joseph for nothing and then signing CJ Miles.
Oh my God.
It basically was a trade, but the actual mechanics of what happened was not.
Well, they were reported as a sign in trade.
Yeah, it effectively was.
That's what I remember from it.
I mean, the Pacers helped the Raptors get the space to acquire their player by getting Corey Joseph. So in a way that satisfies all of the parameters of a sign in trade. It just technically wasn't one.
It was the last time they made one of these moves, I think. It's that rare scenario where both teams want the other team's player. Correct. You know, and you have to make the move to make it. So it's rare. It's hard to pull those off.
The Brogdon one made sense because the Pacers could use the space, right? And that's what the Bucks wanted. And that could be a similar thing with McDermott, like I said, with a trade exception. So, yeah, it depends on how all this works. But that's another thing I wanted to bring up here. But to me, it's very possible moves happen and they can keep both. And it's very possible that they pick neither, but I think the most likely thing is that they end up with one or the other of McDermott and McConnell next year.
I think I probably end up with either one. I think both guys are so desired they just let them go walking.
Yeah, it's certainly tough with their spending.
I mean, I think even if they, let's say, move Lamb, they just figure they do it for something else, and then they just use their Lamb's salary for a player in the MLE, and they have their draft pick, and maybe they're going to move the center, and they're good with how many players they have then.
I had privately been workshopping in my brain Jeremy Lamb plus 13 for Eric Bledsoe and 10. But then Eric Bledsoe got traded today, so I can't do that anymore. So that's off the table now, but that was my big brain Jeremy Lamb trade that is no longer possible.
Yeah, you know, Eric Bledsoe's not great, but that's an improvement from what – I mean, you're just trying to marginally improve your team. That's an improvement for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Could have done that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
but that's kind of Lamb trade we're talking about. Like, it's not going to be for somebody great. It's just going to be a way to shift from, like, an unplayable to maybe a playable player.
Can I throw this in slightly at the end? We got a report 2 days ago that I talked about on Monday's podcast about the Pelicans potentially being interested in Miles Turner. I am slightly thinking that them getting Valanciunas today might make them a little less warm on that possibility. So I guess that the big trade from today, which was Valanciunas plus 17 for Bledsoe, Adams 10, and there were some other seconds and firsts in there, but that could limit the Turner market slightly if the Pacers were interested in.
I haven't thought this trade, but not for this podcast. I'll tell you after the show. I don't get it. But whatever.
Fair enough. It was a weird one, and it has very minimal to me implications on the Pacers, other than a different team is now picking in front of them with different goals in the Memphis Grizzlies instead of the Pelicans. But
Memphis wants somebody. There's somebody they're desired, right? Who's the player?
I think I know who it is, but I would be guessing. So we'll see.
Okay. I thought there was a rumor about who they wanted.
I would be educated guessing, but we could talk about that at a different time. We're talking draft tomorrow because actually we're talking draft the rest of this week because it's in 2 days somehow, which is absolutely crazy. So tomorrow we'll instead of big boarding it, we'll talk about our favorite prospects that make sense for the Pacers at 13, trades up, trades down. Ryan Carr, the Pacers director of player development, will speak to the media tomorrow so we can talk about his comments as well. There's a lot of draft stuff to get to tomorrow. Thursday, draft preview. Friday, breaking down everything that happened. It's going to be a crazy week. I hope you'll join us for it all here at Locked On Pacers. But in summary for today, it might be McDermott, it might be McConnell, it might be both, it might be neither. We have no idea, but I hope you've gotten all the information about why they might choose them. Adam, do you have anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. My voice is about to crackle to death, so get you guys out of here. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, and we will see you tomorrow.